Chapter 31. Inquisitor Kinsta, technically probationary trainee Inquisitor Kinsta, and in reality soon to be just plain Kinsta the unemployed and unemployable, used one of his antennas to make a rude gesture at the back of his superior as that senior Inquisitor left the doorway of the cramped cubbyhole of an office that the trainee had been squeezed into. The senior official of the Court of Special Inquiries had not bothered to attempt entering the claustrophobic space, had not lowered himself to even make eye contact with the disgraced trainee. Kinsta had a new assignment, that of reviewing notes from old cases his superior had successfully prosecuted. The senior official would be retiring and was preparing to write a memoir of his exalted career. Kinsta's job was to write up a summary of each case to refresh the memory of the senior inquisitor. The job sucked, but he was getting a paycheck, at least for the moment. His plan, he knew he needed to have a plan, was to review the notes as slowly as he could get away with and suck up to his superior in a hopefully flattering but not overly obvious way. There wasn't anything else he had to do, nothing else the court trusted him to handle. It was bad enough that he had allowed a data stick to somehow become corrupted when he visited Scarandum. Worse was that he stupidly had brought that corrupted, that infected data stick back to the office. His perfectly sensible reasoning had been to request the court's AIs to analyze the device to determine what had happened, possibly even to recover the original data. Instead, that corrupted device had uploaded malware into the court's IT infrastructure, erasing all of the original records against Skipway. Did Kinsta have any idea how much damage he had caused? How many years had gone into assembling the evidence, records that had to be collected all over again? In fact, he did not know how much damage he had caused, but he could guess. With a groan, he opened the case notes file, stared at it, and just could not manage to get going. The thought was just too depressing. He would start on the task soon. First, he would check messages. A clerk in the court's records office sometimes shared funny memes. Kinsta could use an amusing distraction. There were 5 messages. That's all. No one wanted to be associated with him. The first 3 messages were automated reminders from the court's personnel system. He ignored those. 4th was an advertisement from Skipway. He deleted that immediately and wondered how the junk message had gotten through the office filtering program. 5th. The 5th message he almost deleted unread. It was from Admiral Lutavio Scarandum. Did his former boss want to taunt him in his disgrace? No, that couldn't be. Scarandum had many negative qualities, but cruelty was not one of them. And the Admiral was one of the few lifelines available to Kinsta, much as he hated to admit it. With reluctance, so much that he closed one eye and cringed, he opened the message. At that moment, his life changed. For the better. Otavio Scarandum wanted to negotiate a deal to testify against Skipway, against Skippy, and he would only negotiate with his trusted former aide. He closed the case notes file. That drudgery could be done by someone who did not have important work to do for the Court of Special Inquiries. It was weird leaving all the operational planning to others, but I had good people, and they knew their jobs. Moltown had a substantial strategic defense network, more robust than was typical for a planet with a population of fewer than a billion. The size and depth of the defense network was the bad news. The good news was the SD network was oversized to accommodate the population growth the Bosphorok expected before their patrons used Molotan for target practice. After the planet's IT infrastructure got fried, the economy collapsed, and there were food riots in the cities. The local chamber of commerce had a tough time convincing companies that Molotan was a thriving place to do business. The result was that the planned expansion of the SD network was put on hold, and maintenance cycles repeatedly postponed due to lack of money. The delay in maintenance included skipping many recommended software updates, which for cybersecurity was not good.
"Dude," Skippy had laughed. "Even you could hack into that crappy network."
"Oh, great.
Then do not try that,"
he jabbed a finger at me across my office desk.
"I was joking."
"Yeah, seriously, there are times when seeing you just use your phone makes me cringe. How do you not know any of the shortcuts I taught you?"
"My phone works just fine, thank you. Hey, you can do all the hacking stuff you used to, right?"
"Certainly.
Good. Then, as long as the systems I am not infiltrating have not been specifically hardened against me, like the infrastructure of Maxalt's or Rindaloo ships, that could be a problem. What can I say, Joe? The senior species have learned how to protect themselves from the methods I used to hack into them in the past. Mostly, I am just not as awesome as I once was, he sighed. I can still do it if I use a sentinel as a channel, of course. You know you can't take over a senior species warship, or you're afraid to try. A little of both. In peacetime, I have not had much need to screw with the kiddies or spiders, and the two times I tried it did not go well. It was rather humiliating, actually. My first attempt resulted in a Rindaloo firewall submine scolding me when it detected my presence. It wasn't even worried. It was just annoyed, and it told me to go away. If I thought it would help, I would have hugged him. That must have hurt, buddy. It did. But, the spiders could not believe they stopped me, so they assumed I actually had hacked that ship, and me alerting the firewall was simply taunting. They isolated that ship from the network and practically tore apart its substrate to find what damage I had done. They did identify a series of anomalies they couldn't explain. Of course, any complex system accumulates glitches over years of use. Ultimately, the spiders dropped that ship into a red dwarf star, so I have that going for me. The second time, I was more careful. I managed to infiltrate a Maxalt's cruiser without being detected. That's encouraging. Not so much. I got in, but couldn't go anywhere. Every critical system blocked me. The best I could do was to hack the ship's wastewater controller. At one time, it would have been amusing to stop up that ship's plumbing. But when I realized that was all I could do, it was just sad. Joe, I don't know what has happened to me. Holding out a fist, I lowered my voice. A whole lot of shit happened to you, Skippy. You survived. You're here. You were still awesome. You beat the Elders even after they rigged the game against you.
Thanks for trying to cheer me up, Joe, but...
He looked away. Come on. My fist stayed hanging in the air above the desk.
Oh, what the hell?
He held out his tiny fist and we bumped. I promise to do the best job I can. That's all I can ask. Will you promise that if we find Maxalt's warships at Moletown, we jump the hell out of there? Agreed? I'm not sure I can promise that.
Seriously?
Seriously. Unless and until the kiddies notice we're there, we can hang around to observe.
What good will that do?
We have no indication the Maxalts know about the Raidonium on Moletown, but if the kiddies are there, they could do our job for us. You can intercept and decrypt their communications, right?
Yes, I am damaged, not dead.
Great. Listen. I know it's best if we capture the Raidonium, but if the Maxalts find it first, we can't allow them to take it away. So we wait for the kiddies to put the canister of Raidonium aboard a dropship. While that dropship climbs up above the atmosphere, we hit it with missiles equipped with atomic compression warheads and then jump away. That Raidonium will be scattered over so wide an area it will never be recovered.
I hate to say it, but that is not the worst plan I have ever heard.
What about Chad, the hippie retired scientist? Backpacking doesn't make someone a hippie. So you say. If we can take him out too, we do that. We don't risk the ship for one guy.
When did you become sensible?
When I became a father. We jumped in 6 light hours from Moletown to recon the area. The records we had, mostly stolen from Maxalt's military bases, stated the planet had an SD network that had been fairly state-of-the-art for bird brains before the Maxalt's raid destroyed about half of the satellites. The rebuilding effort had given priority to adding capacity and capabilities to that orbiting network, which meant plenty of money was available to be skimmed off by the contractors and political leadership. The result was that many of the new satellites deployed were empty shells, and the incompatible software used by different phases of the network made cybersecurity a nightmare for the Bosphoroc. That was good news for us. No warships were in orbit. The single space station hadn't been used for years, and Skippy determined the planet was relatively quiet, with no recent visits by the Maxalts. The next jump brought Valkyrie to 3 light seconds from the planet, and I got into a dropship with Skippy, along with 4 other pilots. I would mostly be a passenger. Reed was still unhappy about me being away from the ship, even after I promised to bring back a snow globe from the SD Network's gift shop. Maybe I should have offered to bring her a nice box of candy instead. As usual, Skippy hacked into and took control of the orbital components of the Strategic Defense Network, the Air Defense System's dirt side, and the sensor processing nodes. The bird brains would see only what we wanted them to see, which was nothing but a normal, ordinary day without a human special ops team descending to the surface. "Are we good, Skippy?" I asked. "Give me another half an hour, please. This is a bit more complicated than I expected. It's tricky work. Got to get it right, you know." "Sure, whatever you need." I gave him a confident thumbs up. My thumb was faking. My confidence in him was fake. Back when I commanded the Dutchman and then our mighty Valkyrie, taking full control of a second-tier species network was something Skippy could do in his sleep. That was good, considering how absent-minded he was. The flight close to Molitan had already been extended twice at Skippy's request, and every minute we flew farther from Valkyrie was another 2-minute delay in our return to the ship. Something was different about Skippy. Something was wrong with him. Half an hour went by without the beer can bragging about how he had done yet another awesome thing. 5 minutes later, I tapped out a text to him. "Are you done yet?"
"I will be done when I'm done, numbskull," he snapped at me. Fortunately, he had the good sense to speak only into my earpiece, so the pilots didn't hear.
"This has taken a lot longer than you anticipated," I texted back.
"Fine," he huffed in my ear. "Let's see you do it.
Give me an ETA, please."
"Now!" he shouted in my ear. "How about now? Does that make you happy?"
"Are you, I cleared my throat. "Absolutely certain the network is compromised?
You are questioning my judgment?"
"No, I am," I whispered, though I was in a jump seat near the Panther's rear cargo compartment. "Simply asking for an update."
"I find your lack of faith in me disturbing."
Hearing him joke like that was good.
"Okay, Darth Skipper."
"Yes, I am absolutely certain. I wasn't before, I am now. That network is my bitch now. It's just..." He sighed. "Joe, I haven't had to do this for a while, you know. It's not something you never forget, like falling off a bicycle. Each situation is different. Your next question will be whether it is appropriate to launch the Star Team. The answer is yes. Let's do this and get the hell out of here. I need a vacation." I was worried about him. Bilby was also worried about Skippy, though Bilby had feared Skippy unknowingly had caused the activation of Dogzilla to fail. That was before Moonraider appeared and made it clear our enemy was not just some part of Skippy's subconscious. When Skippy had told me he was operating at 100%, I hadn't been especially concerned. Many times while he was with the Merry Band of Pirates, he had operated at reduced capacity due to some self-inflicted injury, like when he absorbed most of Valkyrie's momentum to escape from a Maxulk's task force. But he should have been able to hack into a Bosphorok network without making any effort, and clearly he had struggled to complete the task. Maybe I should be very concerned about him. We flew back to the ship, and Valkyrie jumped a few more light seconds away, just in case Skippy did not in fact have complete control of the local strategic defense network. We needed to talk about his condition after Frey's team was back with us. He did not need any distractions during the op. Star Team Razor reached the surface in 3 dropships that had been so heavily modified for stealthy special operations, they had the model designation as Raven instead of the original Panther. With Skippy's control of the planetary sensor systems preventing the locals from noticing the approach of the Ravens, the 3 spacecraft could have flown a conventional quiet entry, but I had ordered Frey to practice a maximum stealth flight profile. She didn't argue. It was good practice for her pilots, and testing the techniques and equipment on a second-tier species was a safe environment. She did wonder why I was being so cautious. Unspoken in her question was whether I was concerned about Skippy. I gave her a justification that we both knew was bullshit. She accompanied with her team anyway. A maximum stealth ingress on a planet that had a substantial atmosphere was a complicated process. Each Raven had to fly out the docking bay door with a drone attached to the topside, an autonomous spacecraft that was almost as large as the Raven itself. The drone had its own propulsion system and stealth fields, and if UN Special Operations Command had an official name for those drones, it didn't matter. The operators all called them bat hooks. The major problem with attempting to sneak through an atmosphere onto the surface of a world is kinetic energy. Incoming spacecraft are traveling at orbital velocity. In the case of Earth, that is about 28,000 kilometers per hour,
or around 8 kilometers per second. A ship dropping through Atmo pushes a lot of air out of the way, trading kinetic energy for heat. Normally, that's a good trade-off. It is easier to construct a spacecraft to resist heat than to build it tough enough to survive smacking into the surface at 8 clicks per second, right? The heat is a liability when you're trying to sneak onto the surface of an enemy world, as any infrared sensor on or above that hemisphere can see the burning streak across the sky. Any being with eyeballs can see it also. That's why people on Earth see shooting stars at night. Even without the heat signature, all that air being displaced at hypersonic and then supersonic speed creates a sonic boom that acoustic sensors can easily hear. Finally, the streak of compressed air around an incoming spacecraft can be seen by simple sensors, even old-fashioned radar. So, scrubbing off orbital velocity by slamming into an atmosphere is a cheap way to save fuel, but bad when you're trying to be quiet. Solution? The Bathook. Each of the three Ravens slipped through the SD network, flying a precise flight path to avoid where sensor coverage from multiple satellites overlapped. Technically, that precaution was not necessary, but it was good practice for the pilots. And given that I suspected Skippy was not quite as awesome as usual, maybe it was necessary. Each Raven came to a dead stop above the spot on the surface where the craft was supposed to begin subsonic flight, at which point the Ravens weren't moving fast enough to be in orbit. They were hovering at an altitude of 60 kilometers. Their reactionless engines were keeping them from falling. That deep in a gravity well, it took a lot of power to hover and to keep station with the spot on the surface below as the planet rotated. The Bathook drone separated, with the Raven falling away below 300 meters until the drone's own engines could operate effectively. Slowly, the Raven pilots throttled back, relying on the thin nanofiber cable that connected to the Bathook. The cable began unspooling from the drone, and the Raven rode the cable down, picking up speed until it fell at 500 kilometers per hour. Inside the cockpit and cabin of the three Special Ops spacecraft, pilots and operators pretended to be relaxed, not concerned that they were hanging from a thread almost too thin for the human eye to see. Colonel Frey wished she hadn't eaten a donut with her breakfast. It sat like a lead weight in her stomach. At 20 kilometers, crosswinds were setting up a resonance in the cable that the two dampeners couldn't completely compensate for. The pilots itched to trigger the balloons, but waited for their spacecraft to descend through 18 clicks. The balloons deployed automatically, taking the full weight of a Raven, before the cable was released. Each Raven drifted downward silently below an invisible balloon, while the nanofiber cable fell apart into dust. The Bathooks accelerated smoothly, increasing speed until they reached orbital velocity and could cut off their engines. 15 minutes later, the balloons were deflated, retracted into a recess atop the hull, and the Ravens cruised easily to their designated landing zones. By the time my dropship got back to Valkyrie, I was regretting that the galley crew had made donuts that morning and that I had eaten two of them, although I couldn't decide whether I shouldn't have eaten the glazed or the jelly-filled one. The jelly, I decided. See, making quick judgment calls like that is why I am the commander of Task Force Black. The three-star teams were safely on the surface with no sign they had been detected by anyone other than the local wildlife. I say that because one of their spacecraft had to alter course suddenly as it approached the landing zone, and a flock of large birds exploded off the ground after they were alarmed by the whining of the Raven's turbines. The pilots wisely diverted to an alternate LZ. The three teams were designated Zulu for the people tasked with searching the warehouse in Zufestra. Team Romeo were the reserves, and Team Charlie, of course, were the people tasked with grabbing Chad, since Chad is a nickname for Charles. Why not use just simple Alpha, Bravo, and Charlie for team designations? Because the designation Alpha had been retired by the Special Tactics Assault Regiment. There wasn't a written rule about that. There didn't need to be. Frey was with Team Charlie in the park the locals called the Cascine Wilderness Protected Area. Team Zulu had jumped out the back ramp of their Raven and dropped on parachute balloons to the roof of the warehouse in the thriving town of Zufestra, while Team Romeo waited 40 clicks from the warehouse. The landings had been timed so it was the middle of the night in Zufestra and just after nightfall in the wilderness. Skippy had not been exaggerating about the warehouse. The footprint of the ugly building covered 2 square kilometers, and the height of the roof promised a whole lot of junk could be stacked on top of other junk in there. Whatever.
Team Zulu had come equipped with 4 dozen spider bots that could scan the entire warehouse in less than 40 minutes. They should hopefully find the canister of radonium, grab it, send it aloft on a balloon, and their dropship would retrieve them and the payload without the locals ever knowing they had been visited by aliens. By us. Frey, with Team Charlie, had a tougher job. They had to find one Bosphor rock in a vast forest without being seen by any of the 223 local nature enthusiasts on that section of trail. How did we know the exact count of Bosphor rock who were hiking or camping in the Cascine Wilderness? Skippy was tracking that number of Bosphor rock heat signatures with the SD network sensors. Knowing the location of the locals, plus the chameleon wear camo of the mech suits, helped Team Charlie avoid being seen, but eventually they would need to approach a hiking group to capture Chad. Colonel Frey had 2 advantages that meant her team would not have to search every trail, tent, and shelter in the area. According to the records Skippy had gotten access to, the group Chad was traveling with consisted of 9 hikers plus a guide, and the guide had brought a lupone with her. A lupone is a domesticated pack animal that was native to Molotan so it could eat the local vegetation. Apparently it was the size of a donkey and was being used to carry part of the group's gear. How many groups in the area consisted of 10 Bosphor rock and had a lupone with them? The answer, unfortunately, was 7. Lupones were popular. Most guides who led hikes of more than 2 or 3 days had one with them. 7 groups to search. And, of course, they were scattered all over the freaking woods. Which group was Chad with? We needed Sherlock Skippy to solve that mystery. 2 of the groups were not fully enjoying their time in nature. They were using phones constantly, and none of the calls matched Chad's voice print. That left 5 groups. 1 of the 5 were near the end of the trail. It was unlikely Chad's group could have walked so far since they started. So a recon had to be conducted on only 4 groups, without anyone knowing that big scary aliens were hunting in the woods. Frey could rely on her second advantage. Skippy knew what Chad smelled like. The retired scientist had gone to a hospital 6 years before when he fell off a motorized skateboard. Yeah, that surprised me too. Skateboards are a thing the bird brains commonly use as transportation in urban areas. Luckily for us, the Chadster was not a skilled rider. Hospital records not only had his equivalent of DNA, they had mapped his personal scent, as pheromones are a good indicator of overall health for that species. Also because the Bosphor rock have a strong scent and use pheromones as body language and personal communications. I did not envy the star team who had to ride back to Valkyrie with Chatterino stinking up the cabin. I suggested they keep their helmets on. I'd better make sure we had plenty of air fresheners aboard Valkyrie. Skippy? Frey squinted at the drone while her suit's computer talked to the thing. Have you accounted for how Chad's scent will have changed after he hasn't taken a shower in several weeks? The micro-wormhole in the nearby Raven eliminated the time lag that otherwise would have made the exchange awkward. Yes, his scent won't actually change, there will just be more of it. Their reputation is as a fragrant species. I have heard it described as them smelling better after they are dead because their glands are no longer producing pheromones. Thank you for that delightful bit of trivia. The drone in her hand flexed its wings, and the icon for it in her visor glowed green. Hers was the last drone to be activated. All the others also glowed green. Do you concur the drones are ready? Affirmed. Fly. She gently tossed the drone in the air. Be free. The drones, each the size of a sparrow, soared upward until they cleared the tree canopy. Wings retracted partially, sweeping back, and turbine motors propelled the drones to over 800 kilometers per hour. In the darkness, no one on the ground could see a bird zipping through the sky in a very unbird-like fashion, and their active camouflage holograms rendered them almost invisible. When each drone reached its search area, the turbines switched off, air intake and exhaust doors closed, and the wings extended to begin flapping in the manner of a small bird native to that region of the planet. The drones flew slowly south to north just above the trail, filtering air past their chemical sensors. Basically, they were sniffing for the scent of one particular Bosphor rock. There was a lot of ground to cover. Fortunately, the scent trail was strong. Staff Sergeant Romano pinged Frey just before her helmet visor lit up. We have a hit. Confidence is 99.4. That's our buddy. Chad, Skippy confirmed.
The scent trail even includes traces of his favorite candy that he wasn't supposed to bring with him.
Charlie, Frey twirled a finger in the air. Pack up. We're going back to the bird.
To conserve fuel and to reduce the heat and acoustic signatures, the Raven had inflated its balloon after lowering the stars on what were essentially fancy bungee cords. The ship hadn't moved much after the team hit the ground, and being less than a kilometer away from where the drones were deployed, the stars were able to be back aboard within 15 minutes. Frey stuck her head through the open cockpit door.
Hold on retracting the balloon. I need to confer with Zulu about their progress at the warehouse.
That was the plan. Obtaining the 16 kilograms of radonium was the priority. Until that precious material was located, extracted from the warehouse, and Zulu Team's Raven was safely back through the strategic defense zone around the planet, her team would not move to kidnap Chad. A single bit of bad luck or a screw-up when taking the retired scientist could alert the entire planet that something was wrong.
Captain Wong, she called Team Bravo's leader, what is your progress on the search?
No joy so far, Colonel.
That surprised her, in a bad way. The spider bots should have thoroughly swept the warehouse in far less time than her own Sparrow drones took to find Chad's scent trail.
Is there an issue with the bots?
They are nominal and on their second sweep. The warehouse is packed to the rafters with junk, none of it cataloged.
Time to complete the second sweep?
18 minutes. They're bypassing a section of the warehouse floor that's demolition debris. Skippy's certain the radonium isn't there.
She bit her lip. With her helmet faceplate swung up, her people could see the body language and know what it meant. She needed to make a decision. Proceed toward the camp where hopefully Chad was sleeping for the night, deploy and wait for Zulu to signal they were safely away, or wait at the landing zone. They would wait. Flight time to Chad's campsite was only 25 minutes, even with the dropship's engines in whisper mode. There was no advantage to going in early. The radonium would be located soon, and Team Zulu would exfil back toward Valkyrie while Romeo redeployed to back up her Charlie team.
Be patient, she muttered to herself.
Doing nothing went against her nature. It was also exactly what she needed to do right then.
Colonel Frey, still no joy here. Wong reported from the warehouse 4 minutes later.
How could that?
It's not in the freaking warehouse, Skippy groaned.
I told Joe that I was guessing the stupid thing would be in that big stupid warehouse.
Berating the Elder AI would achieve nothing. Captain Wong, retrieve the spider bots and get your team back to the Raven.
Ma'am, we can.
You might have to redeploy anywhere on this rock and the sun will be up at your location sooner rather than later. Get your feet off the ground.
Understood.
Skippy, what is your second best guess?
Oh, wow. Like you said, anywhere. Go house to house, start looking under couches?
He made a sound like taking a breath.
I'm sorry. I'm under a lot of stress here.
She did not bother pointing out that her team was at the bottom of a gravity well under the umbrella of a strategic defense network.
Any assistance you could provide would greatly be appreciated.
Let me look into it. There might be... damn it.
What?
The property records of that warehouse suck. Basically, nobody kept any records of what went in there. That's why I had to guess where the radonium was. There are still no records available, but I have been reading any documents that are even vaguely related to that warehouse. 12 years ago, there was an inheritance dispute among members of a prominent family on the Bosphorok world, Findestrum. One faction of the family hired lawyers to track down any items or documents that could support their claim to the money.
Skippy, this is all fascinating. What does it...
I'm getting to that. The family patriarch who died had business interests on Molotan and maintained both an office and a residence in the two in Zufestra. When the Maxholtz hit that town as part of their punishment campaign because of actions we did that Joe framed the Bosphorok for, both the office and condo buildings were destroyed. Anywho, the lawyers hired a local company to search the warehouse for items or documents related to the family, and here is the important point. Quote, any other objects that might have potential value, end quote. A truckload of junk and whatever was brought to the spaceport, where the items were examined by a local law firm. Naturally, they wanted to retain any documents that could support the family faction's claim to the money and destroy any evidence that could weaken their claim. In the end, the whole dispute was settled out of court, and none of the junk was taken off-world.
It is still, as far as I know, at the spaceport. What we care about is the law firm here did keep meticulous records, since they wanted to justify every billable hour, and one item on their list is described as an unlabeled canister or containment vessel with unknown contents. So, we have been looking in the wrong place.
Skippy, please do a deep dive on records of that spaceport. Look for storage fees related to a canister, images from a cleaning bot that is annoyed a canister is blocking its access, anything like that, before I commit my team to another search. She pulled up a map of the spaceport. The sun will be rising at the spaceport in less than an hour. A search will have to wait until tonight.
That is probably a good idea. Sorry that I didn't know about the materials being removed from the warehouse. I didn't have access to that data until your teams brought the micro wormholes to the surface. Oh, shit.
What?
We have company. A Maxalt's task force just arrived to crash the party.
Look on the bright side, I said to Reed, as the display counted more and more enemy ships jumping into orbit.
Their timing actually could have been worse.
2 battleships and 5 cruisers.
She shook her head.
A standard Maxalt's cruiser squadron now is 6 ships, so they left one out somewhere around here as a sensor picket. Sir, how could this be any worse?
The canister of radonium could be aboard one of our dropships right now trying to get back through the SD net. The way those kitty ships are hammering away with active sensor pulses, they could detect a Raven even through the stealth field. We would have been delivering the radonium right to the kitties.
So, it could be worse.
As a reply, she just took a deep breath.
What she didn't say was if the kitties found one of our dropships, the star operators had standing orders to trigger the atomic compression warhead that was stuffed into the Raven's rear cargo hold. We wouldn't have the 16 kilograms of Skippy's magic radio dust. But neither would the Maxalts.
Those battleships are their newest Devastator class. Very tough, she pointed to the display.
In a stand-up fight, we could probably take out one of them, but not two. And not the cruisers also.
What the hell are they doing here? She demanded, leaning forward and gripping the armrests tightly.
Skippy sighed. The Admiral in command of the task force is broadcasting what he calls a request for cooperation to locate and remove from the surface a dangerous substance. The kitties claim to be concerned the substance is unstable and poses a threat to their esteemed clients, so naturally, as their protectors, the Maxalt's hegemony is stepping in to assure the safety of blah blah blah. If you're going to lie, put some effort into it. The Bosphorak know their patrons never consider the health and welfare of their lowly clients. Oh, and one of the cruisers just launched 6 dropships, including 4 fighter gunships. That explains why that cruiser is in such a perilously low orbit. The dropships are headed straight for the warehouse in Zufestra.
Ha! I have bad news if they're looking for the radonium there, suckers!
Skippy, I asked. How do they know the radonium is here?
Well, geez, Joe, I have no idea. I figured it out. The AIs of the hegemony are not smart compared to me, but they are also not entirely stupid.
Can you hack those ships from here?
No way, they are beyond my presence. Wait, before you suggest something insane like my flying over there in a dropship, even I can't mask a ship from all the active sensor energy the kitties are using.
Wow! They are irradiating the whole area with sensor pulses all across the electromagnetic spectrum. If there is a box of frozen food in orbit, that radiation will cook it.
Reed cocked her head.
Why are they being so loud?
Because of us, I sighed. Us and Moonraider. And the spiders.
The Maxalts think they have found the most valuable substance in the galaxy, and they know the only threats to them getting their paws on that radonium are Valkyrie, the Rindaloo, and Moonraider. So they're doing everything they can to make sure no one sneaks up on them. Even out here, we are, I checked the display, at a 14% risk of those sensors detecting us.
Skippy, I was going to suggest we launch a micro wormhole toward those ships. You can extend your presence from here through the micro wormhole.
Oh, right.
Joe, could I go to your office?
His words ended in a squeak.
We should, make a plan for me to do, you know, awesome things.
Reed gave me a what-the-hell-is-going-on-with-Skippy look. As an answer, I gave her an I-got-this thumbs up. I don't think she believed me.
Colonel Frey, I called as I stood up.
General, I hear we have visitors upstairs.
We will deal with them, but for the meantime, pull your teams away from the target areas. The Maxalks will be focusing sensors on the warehouse, and they could soon be looking for Chad also.
Sir, the Zulu team will have to go to ground. They can't get back to their dropship before that Raven has to clear the area.
Understood. Do whatever you think is best. I debated how much to tell her. You could be on that rock for a while, so I hope you don't get bored.
We have a deck of cards and plenty of audiobooks, sir. Don't worry about us.
I wish I was as calm about the situation as she sounded. She didn't know what I knew.